Today is the 20th of February 2014, and we're here to interview Renata Mackay. Hello, Renata.
Hello.
Could we begin by asking where you were born?
I was born in Cologne, or Köln am Rhein.
And when was that?
1931.
And what was your name at birth?
Renata Friederike Putz.
Could you tell us a little about your family?
My mother, Ellie Hirschberg, was the eldest of six.
She had an unusual profession, didn't she?
Yes, before the First World War. She had been a receptionist at a photographer's, and in fact she had established herself as a photographer in her own little studio in Berlin.
Which would be, I would have thought, very unusual for a lady to have a profession.
Yes, in 13.
And she was married to a non-Jewish person, did you tell me?
Yes. Do you want this little story or
yes,
not?
Yes, please.
I don't know how she came to be in Cologne. One night, some of her developing apparatus wasn't working, so she knocked on another door where there was still a light on. A gentleman came to repair it, and perhaps I shouldn't be telling you this, but as a thank you, she invited him for dinner. And I'm afraid my brother, my older brother, 4 years older brother, was a result of this. In 1927, she wanted to have this child. From another family relative, I was told, she'd established herself as with a career, because in Cologne, anybody who wanted to be photographed, a member of council, whatever, came to Ellie Hirschberg. And so she wanted to keep this child. But Mathieu Putz was nice. He actually was a lot younger than her, but he said it was too much of a stigma for a child to be a bastard. So he insisted, so he got married 3 days before my brother was born.
I see.
And am I allowed to go a bit backwards and forwards?
A little.
Well, yes, I would just like to say my adoptive father said later, you're just like your mother. You can keep neither time nor money.
Oh, so tell us a bit about
because she wasn't very good at her finances, my father took the keys away from her. She went off to Berlin with my big brother, and he came after her, mm-hmm. brought her back, and as I say, I'm the result of that.
And then what happened to your mother?
Oh, well, in 1933, there was to be a big march in Cologne, just after Hitler came to power, and she decided to take me out to the country until all this was over. And on the way back to the station, it started to rain. She took off her jacket to keep me dry. She developed a cold and took to her bed and died of pneumonia.
Dear.
In 1933.
And your father was left with now two young children.
Yes. And I'm sorry, it's really more important to point out that when she died, her younger sister, who had been married in 1913 and had no children, came literally post-haste to fetch my brother, whom she'd frequently borrowed, and left me behind. Years later, I asked, why did you leave me? He said, oh, because her husband, who was Erwin Freundlich, quite well-known astronomer, associated with Einstein. Anyway, he needed peace and quiet, and children make noise.
So you were left with your father?
I was left with my father and his unmarried sister and his parents. And then after some time, after my mother died, when my father went into his local pub, he was greeted with the words, I hate to say this, but he was greeted with the words, you'll be glad to be rid of your Jewish whore. And so he, I'm afraid, punched this person in a pub, which wasn't a good idea. So my father went to prison. Time passed. His sister, who was pushing me in a pram round the local park, started objecting because people were asking her if I was her bastard. And the grandparents couldn't cope. My aunt and uncle, the Freundlichs, had already taken shelter in Turkey in 1933. Yeah. So in 1935, he asked them, would they take me as well? My uncle was unable to go back into Germany through the good offices of yet another sister who was in social work, she hired a nanny who brought me from Cologne to Turkey in 1935.
So you'd have been very young.
I was four.
Which is very young.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember only part of that journey in that there was a derailment. And, you know, suddenly, I mean, I was asleep, it was at night, and sort of fell out of the bunk and everything stopped. And much later, they must have got another train because we then moved on and the engine was lying there on the embankment. Anyway, we made our way to, I have to look things up on the map and see, I think it must have been Constanza on the Black Sea and got onto a boat, and so possibly also overnight, and arrived in Turkey. And I do remember my uncle and my brother were at the quayside. However, one of the reasons why my grandparents couldn't cope with me was that I was a mewling, puking babe. So I was told. Anyway, okay, I arrived in the morning, came to the house where my aunt and uncle lived and my brother, and I sat at the Kindertisch, little gym. And what did they put in front of me? A bowl of soup. And apparently I was a Suppenkasper.
What's that mean?
Well, there's that book, Strudelpeter, you know, there was ein Suppenkasper in that. And I'm afraid I was, perhaps it was the sea voyage, perhaps it was the accident during the night. I was sick in the soup.
Oh dear.
For which, and I have never forgiven them, for never forgiven my aunt, I was spanked.
Oh, that's so unfair.
Put to bed. Years thereafter, I had asked why. Because the grandparents complained that I was a Suppenkasper.
And that means, what does Suppenkasper mean?
Somebody who wouldn't eat a soup.
Oh, I see.
I'll have to, I have the Struwelpeter both in English and in German. I'll show you the story.
But that is terrible. And particularly, you know, you're such a little girl and a terribly long journey.
Well, I became devoted to the nanny, and my aunt only used me as a photographic model. She had shared a studio with my birth mother in 1913. My aunt Kay had graduated from an art school doing batik and bookbinding, and she moved in with my mother. My aunt decided she could see her sister earning a living, she could. Well, you've seen Penguin books. Mm-hmm. Well, the German version of that was Tauchnitz. And people might buy a Penguin edition but wanted it bound, right? Mm-hmm. So because, there was this large Mishpoker.
Large family.
Yes, large family. And strangely enough, my aunt and uncle discovered they were related to two Kassira sisters. So then... And my uncle was one of seven, and my aunt was one of six. So there was
a large family.
Right, where were we?
So you were telling me,
yes.
What had your aunt to do with the German version?
Okay, when
of
they
Penguin?
Lived together, my two mothers, obviously Kay learnt quite a lot from Ellie in Turkey. She had an Armenian maid who cooked and did the housework.
Tell us some more about the books then, please, Renata.
Oh, that my aunt felt she could earn her living by binding these Tauchnitz editions, and people could choose, obviously, the leather and the tooling, and also sort of the end papers. I still have one, very amusing, but she made for my uncle before they were married. And as my uncle was very, very tall, the inscription was just for mein Kleinen.
For my little one.
Oh.
And was your uncle Jewish? Is that why they left? Or just
Yes.
Well, he was Jewish as well.
Yeah. Although his father had married out, he married a Scottish lady from Gloucester. Yes.
Was he practicing as a Jewish person?
No.
But he still had to leave Nazi Germany.
Yes, I'm sorry. Jumping backwards and forwards, it is sort of important to the thing. Can we go back to just arriving in Turkey, or just after,
yes,
just
that's
arriving,
fine. That's fine.
So that
no
I was
problem.
I was devoted to my nanny,
right.
And my aunt basically ignored me. Hmm. My brother went to a school. It's funny, it was an American school, just up the hill, and my aunt only used me as a photographic model. She'd learnt the skill from her sister, and in the observatory that my father had established in Turkey, she could develop things there. And forgive me if I go on, but from her travels with my uncle, they'd been to Java, Sumatra, on eclipse expeditions. So she was very interested in everything in Turkey. She wore a cloak, and she had a reflex camera, which she sort of hid inside the cloak. And I'm afraid she took photographs in one of the mosques in Istanbul. And as she also was very clever in handicrafts, she developed this photograph and then put it onto graph paper and made... She stitched them, and I had two items of her work. Actually, my daughter embroidered one of them, and there was a cushion in my uncle and aunt's house, which was from a tile. And because this cushion was always in that house, when I got married, and I now have a cushion with that particular.
So all taken from the tile which she had photographed in the mosque.
Tell us a little about your uncle, if you could, please.
My uncle was Erwin Finlay Freundlich. The Finlay comes from his Scottish mother, from Cheltenham.
I gather he was a very eminent scientist.
He became associated with Einstein. Einstein says that Erwin Freundlich was the first person to offer to make... experiments at eclipses to help to prove his theory. I mean, he was the first person who volunteered. In Germany, he became the director of the Einstein Tower in Potsdam, which is now a World Heritage Site. And strangely enough, I happened one day to be in the Glasgow School of Art, where there was a Mendelssohn, Erich Mendelssohn exhibition.
Mm-hmm. The architect?
The architect, yes. And going along the walls, there were sort of what we call explanatory panels, and I looked at one and I thought, that's funny, that looks like Erwin's writing. And it was. It was my father, with Erwin, my uncle, who became later my adoptive father, who had met Erich Mendelssohn through Ed Mendelssohn's wife, Louisa Maas, who was a cellist, and my uncle was learning to play the cello. That's the connection between Erwin and Erich Mendelssohn. Louisa Mendelssohn and Kay Freundlich were invited 50 years after the building of the Einstein Tower, for the celebrations, yeah. But both ladies decided they were in their 80s and didn't want to go. But I'm sorry to digress, but in 1993, I happened to be in Berlin, and the wall hadn't come down, decided I wanted to go to Potsdam, and arrived at the gate of the scientific park. And at the gate, I mentioned that my father had worked there. And so the gate man gave me, first of all, a leaflet and told me which way to go. And so I went. I think he rang up, and so the director met me. And I was totally gobsmacked when I entered, because on the one wall, there was a woodcut by another famous German... I have to think hard. I'll come back to what his name was. So this woodcut, just of the head of Erwin, and on that wall, on the other wall, an enormous photograph of Erwin sitting on the packing cases of his instruments, waiting to go, getting ready to go on one of these eclipse expeditions to the Far East, Java and Sumatra. But that was 93, and he left Germany in 33.
My goodness, you must have been proud.
Gobsmacked. Yes. Not only, though, the director said, there were obviously some roads, but there were also kinds of footpaths. And one of these footpaths was called the Freundlichweg.
Amazing.
Some years later, my son with his wife and two gorgeous daughters went also to visit it. And so my daughter-in-law gave me this photograph of them standing underneath Freundlichweg. And she captioned this photograph, "In the family way."
That's great.
I'm sorry,
that's fascinating. Let's go back to Turkey in 1937. I think you said that's when you had to leave.
We didn't have to leave. No. He was experiencing difficulties. Anyway, the German-speaking university in Prague, the Charles University, was looking for an astronomer who could establish yet another observatory and Department of Astronomy. And strangely enough, the man who was in charge of interviewing or finding these people was somebody called Wenzel Pollack, who also was associated with Einstein. Anyway, he wrote to a whole lot of people, some Nobel Prize winners. There were three people shortlisted for this post in Prague, and they all came down in favor of Erwin Finley Freundlich. So he was offered the job and said, however, we had German citizenship. He couldn't go back so close to Germany without some guarantee of protection. Mm-hmm. So we became Czech citizens before we even set foot in Czechoslovakia. Mm-hmm. And to digress even further, all during the war, there was a Czech government in exile, and my father had to go down there every 2 years to get a fresh stamp on his passport. And in the course of time, he met the young Jan Masaryk, and also Beneš, who became, for a short time, the president of Prague. And they would come and visit the observatory in St. Andrews. All I was trying to say was that, if I may, my aunt only used me as a photographic model when there was film left in the camera. And there's one very cute photograph. I've been woken from my rest, and I'm sort of standing there, dreamy-eyed, just so she could finish the reel and go off and develop it.
So tell us about Prague then. Did you actually go to Prague then?
Yes, 37.
Right, and how long were you there?
I became six, which is the normal school entry age sur le continent, Jimmy would say. And so I went to school, and what did I get? First of all, I got measles.
It was quite dangerous, actually.
Well, it started slowly, and my father, being at the university, he of course asked various other medical professors to come and look, and somebody found the coplic spots inside my mouth, which are, first identification. So I was barely finished with the measles when I developed whooping cough. And then I whooped and I whooped until my mother got me up because there were no more blankets for my bed.
Eventually, did you get to school?
Yes.
And by that time, could you speak a little Czech?
No. I only have one sheet of my school report, which was just sort of the signing off because we were leaving to go to Scotland.
So how long did you attend school for?
About a year, but most of it having measles and whooping cough.
Oh, right.
So eventually you had to leave, of course, Czechoslovakia as well.
Yes, well, with the annexation of the Sudetenland.
So they went into the Sudetenland in October
38. I have no idea, the date. But then the students rioted, at the Prague University and the Charles University, and my father was advised not to come and lecture in German. So he was without work, but his association with Einstein, he started writing to various people that he knew, and one of them was Sir Arthur Eddington. Both my our father, uncle's expeditions were clouded over, but Eddington was the first one to get a result. So they were in correspondence, and in fact, after the First World War, when Eddington came to Germany to meet Einstein, my uncle, adoptive father, was there as a dolmetscher, a translator. So he wrote to various people, Eddington amongst them, and Eddington said, strangely, there was a vacancy in St. Andrews in Scotland, and my uncle, what do you want me to call him?
I think call him your father.
Call him my father, right. Said he was on a lecture tour in Holland, so he could easily come over to be interviewed. So he was interviewed with, incidentally, also the help of the Astronomer Royal, and that's another story. He was interviewed by the principal of St. Andrews University on literally the day the Nazis rolled into Prague.
Which was in March 39.
Yes, March 15th of March 1939. So my father said, I'll take your job if you can get my wife and children out.
He must have been very worried.
He was.
So how did they manage that?
Well, there was a lecturer in the Department of German at St. Andrews University who just happened to be in London doing his own research. So his wife sent a telegram. Sorry, I should mention this man, Laurie Wardale, who I refer to as my Scarlet Pimpernel.
Well, just like the Scarlet Pimpernel, he managed to whisk you out of Prague, did he?
Yes, well, his wife sent him a telegram saying, can you fetch family freundlich, expenses paid? So my father went hot foot, night train, down to London, armed with money and all sorts of addresses and things. And there is a very amusing, may I digress again, through a strange set of circumstances, years and years later, I came across Wardale's daughter, who had been, believe it or not, interviewed by Margaret Drabble for a book that she was writing. I met Margaret Drabble, and I was telling her this story, and she said, oh, I interviewed Carol. She now lives in Cumbria. And again, quite a few years elapsed, and I happened to open the book by Margaret Drabble, and I looked in the at the back, the sort of
people, the appendix.
Yes, so it just said Carol Dorbarn, Cumbria. So I was at that point separated, footloose, fancy free. So I rang Directory Inquiries and said, "Can you give me a number for Dorbarn?" I said, that's all I have, Sedbergh or Cumbria. And within seconds, the man said, shall I put you through? And I said, oh, no, just give me the number. So I rang Carol. Renata! So she said she wasn't well, but I was footloose and fancy free. Come and see me. So I came within a couple of days, drove down, and I was hardly inside the door when she gave me a rather grubby manila file in which was the entire correspondence between her father and her mother back in St. Andrews, the telegrams. And she said, although she now had grandchildren, this wasn't her story. She gave it to me, and it's absolutely amazing what's in that.
Absolutely amazing. So what did he do? How did he get you out? Did he take a plane to Prague then to rescue you?
Yes. Well, first of all, obviously, he had to go, I think, to the German embassy and get permission to go, because my father didn't dare go in. And Laurie said, while he was sitting waiting, he could see my father pacing up and down, because it was an ordinary sort of office with half obscured window, but half glazed, and all he could see was my father's hat walking backwards and forwards. And he'd been given a letter dated the 18th of March, the principal of the university, 18th March, saying, Mayor, This is to certify that Professor Dr. Erwin Findlay Freundlich, formerly of Prague, has been appointed to be Napier Lecturer in Astronomy and Director of the Astronomical Observatory. The appointment is approved by the Home Office, which has given permission to Professor Freundlich, together with his wife and two children, to reside in Great Britain. Dr. Freundlich is already in this country, and it is requested that every facility be given to his wife and family to proceed to St. Andrews to join him. So armed with that letter, so it was very unfortunate that both Laurie Wardell and his wife would just write, they didn't put dates on their letters, just Tuesday or Friday. He wrote a great big long letter. It took him quite several days until he got to Prague. I know he flew from Croydon to... I'd have to look it all up and tell you.
It was certainly a very dangerous journey, I think. It was. Very brave.
I know.
And of course, there weren't passenger flights in those days.
Well, there were passenger flights until the very last minute. Ah. Once Laurie had got to us, right, we just missed the last plane.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, to come back to Turkey. Some of his, Erwin's problems in Turkey was... He wanted to get some of his equipment for his observatory from Britain, and the Turks didn't want this. The Turks had been in with the Germans, but Ataturk was clever enough to entice, the Jewish people that wanted to emigrate to them. But anyway, Erwin went to the British consul in Turkey and met ever such a nice man, Mr. Huff, who was also musical. And you won't believe it, but Mr. Huff went to Prague at the same time as the Freundlich family in 1937. So we had met. We had been there for tea. And where does he live? But right opposite Prague Castle. Anyway, so he had said to my mother, give me your jewels, give me your money, I'll send it out in the diplomatic bag. But in the end, that didn't happen. But he said... Right, while you and Laurie Wardell are busy trying to get the furniture packed, my father was going hairless. You know, he just wanted... But my mum, she packed a whole lift. All our furniture came. Anyway, Mr. Huff said, send Nanny and the children to me. So we were in the... I thought it was the British Embassy, but again, in 1994, I was in Prague and went to, first of all, to the embassy. And they let me look out of the window and said, I said, no, that's not the place. And then, by sheer chance, I happened to find that he lived in a big, tall building, which was once opposite the top end of the Hradschin. And this is something that horrifies my daughter, or rather keeps wanting me to tell this story. We were having our 11s, sitting sort of on the window, looking over to the castle, when a great big entourage came out and went down the side of the hill. Somebody was standing up, and there was a flagpole beside the corner of this building, and somebody was hoisting up a Czech flag as this car with, I don't know who it was, whether it was Hitler or Goering.
Well, that was very provocative to do that when the Nazis were there.
So anyway, somehow we got onto the train. Oh, and Laurie sent a marvellous telegram to his wife, which is, the first one is, can you go Prague and fetch family friendly? Expenses paid, please wire. This one is dated St. Andrews, 27th March. Endlich Prague. Finally arrived in Prague. After several flights and train journeys and crossing borders. I even have his passport, Laurie's passport.
Tell us. He got you on the train, the whole family and the nanny.
And wait a minute. Oh, yes, another one dated. Oh, this was strangely dated, the 3rd of April. Bringing flock back Wednesday.
Now, let's just take you to St. Andrews, Renata. They must have been very pleased to have your uncle, because he'd come from such a prestigious position as director of the Einstein Tower in Potsdam. Tell us about what happened when you got there.
Well, thank goodness my father was fluent in English and my mother also. Okay, please may I just say that when I went to school
in St. Andrews,
it was the posh girls' school, the prep school for St. Leonard's, I was still having the feeling the effects of, you know, the whooping cough. And when at playtime, when we went out into the playground, there was Tig, in the first place I didn't know what Tig was, and I couldn't run because I was coughing. And so I ran to, there was a teacher sort of supervising, because I was used to running to Nanny. So I was referred to as a nasty Nazi.
That's terrible.
I couldn't explain to the children that we'd run, we were running away from the nasty Nazis.
That's horrible. And did eventually, did you befriend them, and did they later discover that you were running away?
No, not really. Not really. Although, there's another funny little episode. In the summer term, well, I've arrived in April. In the summer term, I joined the Brownies. And because my accent wasn't very good, they sat me on a toadstool. It was all pixies, on a toadstool, playing a flute. I have a photograph to prove it. But, however, this is very naughty indeed. My first school report was progress very good, conduct very good. That was the end of the summer, 39. Came the long summer holiday, and I had met another family, the family of the professor of Greek, who had also rescued a family, in fact, had them living with them for a very short time. So I met Kate, a lifelong friend. At the end, by December, my school report said, progress very good, conduct good, but already a little too talkative.
So you were settling in. That's a good sign. So you studied in St. Andrews.
No, I went to school in St. Andrews.
You went to school in St. Andrews. And at the end of school, you decided to become a nurse, am I right?
Yes. Well, my older brother, who had gone to university at a time when a lot of the ex-soldiers, you know, were coming back. Anyway, for some reason or other, what he wanted to study was engineering, and you didn't do that in St. Andrews. It was in Dundee, and he spent most of the time on the train playing cards. So she didn't do very well, and my father was bitterly disappointed. I wanted to be a nurse, but my father said, nurses didn't have a good reputation, in a way. And he said, no, if you're interested in medicine, you must study to be a doctor. And I was actually very lazy and hated exams. Mm-hmm. And I knew, like, 5 years, I'd met enough medical students by this time. Anyway, one of my teachers, luckily, said to me, if you want to be a nurse, you have to go to the Florence Nightingale Training School in London. And strangely enough, the daughter of the minister of the town church, who was head girl at St. Leonard's, she went to St. Thomas's. So anyway, my father wrote to matron of St. Thomas's and signed himself Erwin Finley Freundlich. The double barrel seemed to have worked. And so I was invited to St. Thomas's. I was enrolled, and everybody said afterwards it was quite an honour to be accepted.
Mm. And by that time, did you feel yourself as having properly integrated into Britain, or did you still feel...
Oh, no, still felt very European.
Did you?
Yes.
But did you find people were more willing to befriend you by this time? Or local people?
No, I think, sadly, my mother didn't settle well. And my father, I think, didn't. Although, I mean, the university was good in many ways to him. When he became 65, he was in the middle of a research project, which he wanted to finish. So they allowed him to stay on till he was 70. But as he also had gone to Germany to see what relatives were left and found a brother and several nieces, and with restitution, he decided to go back to Germany in 1958, much to Fred's, to my husband's chagrin.
Yeah. So you were down, you studied nursing in St. Thomas's?
No, I didn't. I was too young. Unfortunately, the matron accepted me, but said, I was then, I think, 16 and a half when I went for the interview. Mm. And she said, no, go to the Edinburgh School College of Domestic Science, where they have a pre-nursing course, which would get you through the first two exams, the hygiene anatomy, physiology, hygiene, dietetics. But unfortunately, the pre-nursing course, first of all, had a year of domestic science, where my father said all I learnt was how to peel potatoes with mathematical precision, or did you know you should sweep a room from the window to the door? Oh, and how to engage and dismiss a maid. So we all of the ones that were on this, the ones, the pre-nursing ones, we all decided at the end of the first year we would just go and find ourselves another job. And somebody in my class at school in St. Andrews had gone to the City Fever Hospital. So she was a year ahead of me. So I just followed in her footsteps and did fever nursing for...
at the Edinburgh City Hospital. And then how did you meet your husband?
That's another long story. Yes. All right. My father came from St. Andrews to Glasgow as external examiner. And at the university, he met a very nice man called Dr. Orenstein, who I think, I can't remember exactly what his, I know he was in product engineering, but anyway. Anyway, one evening, the Goldschmidt family, consisting of my father-in-law, mother-in-law, and sister-in-law, Liesl, were on their way home from the factory they had established, but between Gallowgate and London Road, just past across. And they were going home to Thornley Bank, and however, they had borrowed a book. Well, the German Jews that came to Glasgow tended to congregate together, right? Mm-hmm. And they sent Liesl upstairs to the Ornsteins to return a book, and Liesl was an awfully long time coming back. So when she got back in the car, she said, the Ornsteins have the most fascinating visitor. So when my mother-in-law got home, she phoned Mrs. Ornstein and said, the next time you have this fascinating visitor, please invite us as well. Fred would be 4 years older than me also, was already studying already in Leicester. When he came out of college, was full of ideas, but his mother wouldn't sort of, you know, let him bring these into the factory. So Fred, disillusioned, went off to Canada for a while, where he was going to start his own little business. But then his father died, so he came back. Right. Oh, yes, at Liesl's wedding, my parents met another German Jewish family called Pausen and discovered they also had paintings by Lionel Feininger, a quite well-known...
So you met your husband and...
No, that was them, through the Pausens, that I met.
Ah, right.
Fred, right? I'll try and be very, very quick. Mm. Okay, at the wedding, they met the Pausens, and they said, come and see our paintings. Nice. So one of the days when I came home to St. Andrews on nights off or something, the Pausens were just leaving, getting on the train. And, oh, my father was going to America to see another observatory, Mount Wilson, who goodness knows what they had, to get a bigger telescope. And so he said, when your parents are away, and you have nights off, come and stay with us. And that suited me very well because I had met another medical student. However, the long and the short and the tall was when the first time I arrived, Mrs. Powerson said, you must go to bed because Fred Goldschmidt is coming to take you to the concert tonight. He's just come back and he's living with his mother and he doesn't know any nice Jewish girls. I said, no, I'm going out, I'm meeting Ian, the medical student, for tea at the Cadoro. However, when Fred... Oh, yes. Apparently, well, Mrs. Powerson phoned Fred, and it was a dutiful son. He said, all right, I'll take her to the concert on Saturday, but I'm busy all day Sunday. So anyway, when he came... Actually, I just fell for him straight away. And at the concert, we turned to each other and said exactly the same thing. And... anyway, that was how I met Fred.
That's very nice. I know that your life took on many twists and turns after that, but I'll have to come to a close and ask you a couple more questions. If you look back now on your time in Scotland, what would you say were the high points of your life here?
Funnily enough, I became very friendly with the librarian, who was an awfully nice person, Eileen Ryan, Irish, who introduced me to youth hosteling and took me in 1947 to Skye. We cycled all the way to Skye, although part of it we cheated. We took the train from Fort William to Mallaig. We took the boat from Mallaig to Portree and we took the post bus from Portree to Staffin. And then we walked over the Quirang, over to Uig and back again, and then cycled all the way back to Kyalakin and then took the boat. So I fell in love with Scottish scenery.
Now you certainly don't sound German anymore. Do you still feel continental?
I feel European, yes. I'm in this present mode of, I feel Scottish. I mean, I tell everybody how wonderful Scotland, tell them where to go and where to stay. Proud to be Scottish, proud to be British, but still, since I've been drawn back into AJR,
the Association of Jewish Refugees,
I feel continental.
Got a lovely son and daughter, and yes. You also have grandchildren as well, which I think is wonderful.
Oh, yes, well, okay, when I became pregnant, just like my mother, Fred said to me, if it's a boy, what should we call it? And as I knew he was devoted to his father, who had died 2 years previously, I said, well, his father was just Willie Goldschmidt. So I said, well, Willie, of course, but he must be William, you know, mm-hmm. on his birth certificate. But when he went to Hutchie, the headmaster simply said, you know, what's he called? And I said, well, Willie. So the headmaster then said, well, he'll be Willie here as well. Anyway, Willie came first. And then when my daughter was born, of course, I named her Ellie after my mother, although she's Elinor, Elinor, but she's Ellie after my mother. And then, so Ellie has 5 children in Israel, 4 of which have been to the army, and the youngest is just getting ready to go. And Willie, also married out, a nice lady who's had 3 children before, but anyway, gave him 2 wonderful daughters.
Which is lovely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. We've thoroughly enjoyed speaking to you.